officials, members of the former security forces, their visas, for example, were not, issued or extended.
We have 10 seconds, Bilal. We have 10 seconds. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Just 10 seconds to wrap.
I think in that sense, India is seen abandoning Afghanistan. But on the other hand, it's good that India is again back in Afghanistan. They have a presence and they continue to help the people of Afghanistan, whether it's with medicine or whether it's with, wheat for the people.
We're going to do part two of this discussion and post online at democracynow.org. Bilal Sarwawi, Afghan journalist, and also the latest news out of Reuters, U.S. and Taliban officials are talking about the possibility of unfreezing assets. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX in Portland. Kendall Northwest is a new circus and fine arts festival, including intro courses in the fire arts, fire spinning, live music, and competitive circus games. That's the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX, 819 Southeast Taylor Street in Portland. That's the Kendall Northwest Launch Party on Thursday, July 30th from 5:45 p.m. to 11 p.m. at Jaja PDX, 819 Southeast Taylor Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, deadly, dangerous heat, and it's about to continue. People who teach in our universities and colleges are seeing a big decrease in their pay.
We worry about the morale of faculty who have, for the last couple of years, been in constant crisis mode, putting out one fire after another.
And even as oil companies rake in profits, they are keeping their prices high. What new research shows about that? Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, July 28th, 2022. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. An excessive heat warning remains in effect until 9 p.m. Saturday. Forecasters expect high temperatures from 97 to 102 degrees, with overnight lows reaching 60 to 70. This impacts the greater Portland metro area in Oregon and in Washington, the greater Vancouver area. The extreme heat will significantly increase the potential for heat-related illnesses, especially for people working or participating in outdoor activities and for those who do not have access to air conditioning. The National Weather Service recommends that we drink plenty of fluids, stay in air conditioning if you can, stay out of the sun, and check on relatives and neighbors. Never leave young children and pets unattended in vehicles. And if you're trying to get relief from the heat in rivers, lakes, or the ocean, use safe water practices and wear a life preserver. In Multnomah County, cooling shelters will remain open through Saturday morning, July 30th. About 170 people have stayed in the shelters so far. The overnight ones are at the Charles Jordan Community Center, the East Portland Community Center, the Portland Building, and the Sunrise Center. A daytime cooling center is also open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. at 435 Northwest Gleason Street in Portland. The City of Portland is also hosting misting stations at six locations: Dawson Park, East Portland Community Center, Glen Haven Park, Harney Park, Lentz Park, and Mount Scott Community Center. The city is also hosting 24-hour water filling stations at Lentz, McKenna, and Lynchwood Parks and the Big Four Corners Natural Area. TriMet is offering free rides to cool spaces for anyone who cannot afford to pay a fare. Some state-level abortion bans are being challenged, and successfully. KBOO's Josh Salem takes a look.
Abortion bans set to take effect this week in two states, Wyoming and North Dakota, have been temporarily blocked by judges because of lawsuits arguing that the bans violate their state constitutions. A judge in Wyoming yesterday agreed its ban would harm healthcare workers and their patients, and a North Dakota judge sided with the state's only abortion clinic, Red River Women's Clinic in Fargo. The Wyoming law was set to take effect yesterday, and the North Dakota law was set to take effect today. Attorneys arguing in Jackson, Wyoming, disagreed over whether the state constitution provided a right to abortion that would nullify that state's abortion trigger law. The judge did seem to agree the ban left pregnant patients with dangerous complications and their doctors in a difficult position as they balance serious medical risks against the possibility of prosecution. Judge Melissa Owen said, quote, "That is a possible irreparable injury to the plaintiffs. They are left with no guidance," end quote. Several states, including Wyoming, recently passed abortion trigger bans that should have taken effect if the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. That ruling occurred on June 24th. The Wyoming law would outlaw abortions, except in cases of rape or incest, or to protect the mother's life or health, not including psychological conditions. Doctors and others who provide illegal abortions under Wyoming law could have gotten up to 14 years in prison. Four Wyoming women and two nonprofits sued Monday to contest the law, claiming it violates several rights guaranteed by the state constitution. Wyoming Special Assistant Attorney General Jay Gerdy said the state constitution neither explicitly nor implicitly allowed abortions. North Dakota's law would make abortion illegal in the state, except in cases of rape, incest, and protection of the life of the mother. The state's only abortion clinic had argued that a 30-day clock should not have started until the U.S. Supreme Court issued its certified judgment 2 days ago. In North Dakota, County District Judge Bruce Romanek agreed that the state had moved quickly to let the ban take effect. The ruling will give Red River Clinic more time to relocate a few miles away to Moorhead, Minnesota, where abortion remains legal. Other states have gone in the opposite direction. After the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey said a 19th century law banned abortion in that state. Last week, a state judge barred the state from enforcing the ban, saying it was superseded by conflicting newer laws. West Virginia lawmakers then debated a sweeping abortion ban bill on the House floor, which would make providing the procedure a felony, punishable by up to 10 years in prison. The bill does make exceptions for rape or incest, up to 14 weeks of gestation, and for certain medical complications. Hundreds of people went to the state capitol for the debate. Many stood outside the House chamber and Speaker Roger Hanshaw's office, chanting and holding signs reading, quote, "We will not go quietly," and, quote, "Stop stealing our health care." Protesters could be heard during the debate yelling, quote, "Face us," end quote. The final vote was 69 to 23 in favor of the ban in the Republican-dominated House of Delegates. It now goes to the Senate. One of the bill's supporters, Republican Delegate Brandon Steele of Raleigh County, said, quote, "What's ringing in my ears is not the noise of the people here. It's the cries of the unborn, tens of thousands of unborn children that are dead today," end quote. The latest court action in North Dakota and Wyoming adds them to a list of other states, including Kentucky, Louisiana, and Utah, where judges have at least temporarily blocked implementation of abortion trigger laws. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
Four projects in Oregon are getting grant funding to help make their communities more age-friendly. They include the Ashland Parks and Recreation Commission, where a venue for older Oregonians will be built. Eric Tegedoff reports.
Projects that make communities more age-friendly in Oregon are getting support from the state's AARP organization. After six projects were chosen by AARP in June to receive grants in Oregon, AARP Oregon chose four more from that original pool of applicants as part of its age-friendly community grants. Eileen Glatt is superintendent of senior services with the Ashland Parks and Recreation Commission. Their project to build out a venue, including wheelchair access and benches, near the Ashland Senior Center is one of the grant recipients.
Then we'll be able to hold classes out there like line dance and tai chi and yoga, and it will be more accessible for some of the outdoor entertainment events that we do.
The Ashland Project is receiving $6,250. The AARP Oregon grants fund projects that aim to make transportation and public spaces more accessible, as well as promote diversity, inclusion, and civic engagement. The state's four grants total nearly $15,000. Glatt says this is a small but meaningful project, and that it was inspired from the conditions the pandemic created.
Especially during COVID, we realized we needed more opportunities for outdoor activities, to have a place where social connections can still thrive even when pandemic conditions prevent indoor gathering.
Other grant recipients are the City of Philomath, which is adding benches in its city park, Grow Portland, which is rebuilding a garden in the city, and the Main Street Garden and Enterprise, which will expand its offerings to the local food bank in Wallowa County. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
In California, anti-hunger advocates are celebrating progress, but they vow to continue the fight with the Food for All campaign. As Suzanne Potter reports, California's new budget expanded CalFresh to undocumented people age 55 and older. But now the mission continues to win coverage for low-income undocumented people of all ages.
California's new budget expands CalFresh benefits to low-income undocumented people age 55 and over, and now advocates are looking to build on that progress. The Food for All initiative wants to remove restrictions on age or immigration status. State Assemblymember Miguel Santiago praises the governor and legislature for the expansion, but says it's unacceptable that some families still go hungry in California, the fifth largest economy in the world.
We were able to succeed in getting 55 and above who are undocumented into the CalFresh program. That's just one step of a longer fight to feed people.
Nourish California estimates that CalFresh keeps nearly 700,000 Californians out of poverty every year, including more than 300,000 children. The expansion will benefit 75,000 undocumented seniors, but 690,000 to 840,000 Californians remain ineligible for CalFresh solely due to their immigration status. Benjamin Chow with the California Immigrant Policy Center says CalFresh mitigates poverty, hunger, and suffering.
It intervenes in a vicious cycle. Having difficulty affording food results in families and households making hard choices, poor nutrition outcomes, poor health outcomes, and that makes it more difficult to escape from food insecurity and poverty.
Mar Velez with the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California says the need is urgent.
There are 2.3 million undocumented residents in our state, and 2 in 5 or 45% experience food insecurity. And nearly 2 in 3 or 63% of undocumented children experience food insecurity.
For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Big oil is keeping prices high, even as crude prices are dropping. As Eric Alatis reports, a new analysis of the spot price of oil, a point-in-time price of crude that impacts global retail pricing, shows that oil and gas companies are keeping the prices high at the pump as they generate record profits.
A new analysis shows big oil companies are much more reluctant to lower gasoline prices when crude prices drop than they are to raise prices when crude costs rise. In one example documented by the group Accountable.us, when crude prices dropped by just over 1% in April, oil companies raised gas prices by nearly 2%. Jordan Schreiber with the group says Wyoming consumers might expect prices at the pump to go down as the cost of crude oil drops, but gas prices remain stubbornly high.
We would hope that the American people who have been really having a tough time paying for gasoline over the last few months would see some price drops. But unfortunately, this is just another example of big oil really gouging folks at the pump.
After crude prices dropped by nearly 2% in May, companies raised gas prices by nearly 4%. In June, after crude dropped by more than 7%, it took days for prices to drop by just 2%. Industry groups have deflected criticism linking pricing to record profits and have called on the Biden administration to open up more public lands for drilling to help ease prices. Schreiber says oil and gas companies left parcels of public lands they had specifically requested on the table at a recent drilling auction and notes the industry is already sitting on thousands of untapped leases. Schreiber believes the primary cause of high prices can be found in company ledger books. Last year, the top 25 oil and gas companies saw a record $237 billion in profits.
We're looking at quarter two earnings calls this week, and we anticipate those to be record-breaking for 2022 as well. These oil and gas companies have little to no incentive to actually bring this down, and so they can point fingers all they want to, but the reality is they're just gouging American consumers.
Schreiber says she hopes the analysis will serve as a wake-up call for Congress to take action, and she calls on voters to urge their representatives to pass a windfall tax to hold big oil accountable. She says it's not reasonable or sustainable for the American people to continue footing the bill for companies' record profits.
Rather than turning those profits back around to boost production or invest in clean energy, they're just sending it all back to shareholders and stock buybacks. Truly record-setting amounts of money going back to shareholder and stock buybacks this year and last year.
This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Wyoming News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with the creator of Dungeon Battle Karaoke, a game show adventure inspired by Dungeons & Dragons and a love of karaoke. We will follow it up with Noise Filter, your public health podcast. At 6, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, the Indigenous Power Hour. Tonight's weather, an excessive heat warning is in effect for the Greater Portland metro area in Oregon and the Greater Vancouver area in Washington. It stays in effect until 9 p.m. on Saturday. Overnight lows will reach around 68. Tomorrow and Saturday, highs at 100, sunny skies. Sunday, it'll top out at around 97. Today in history, on this date in 1868, the 14th Amendment granting citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the United States, including formerly enslaved people, was officially adopted into the U.S. Constitution. Secretary of State William Seward issued a proclamation certifying the amendment. Our quote of the day is from William Seward, who argued during the trial of an African-American criminal defendant. He said, "The color of the prisoner's skin and the form of his features are not impressed upon the spiritual immortal mind which works beneath. In spite of human pride, he is still your brother and mine, in form and color accepted and approved by his father and yours and mine, and bears equally with us the proudest inheritance of our race, the image of our maker. Hold him then to be a man." Senators reach a deal to salvage parts of the Build Back Better Act. The Fed announces another interest rate hike to curb inflation. And protesters are urged to avoid the congressional baseball game. With more on the stories impacting our democracy, here is today's edition of 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is something we've waited for a very long time.
More than a year after negotiations began, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Senator Joe Manchin struck an energy and health care deal, part of a budget reconciliation package Democrats plan to pass on a party line vote. It invests $369 billion in energy climate programs, $300 billion to reduce the deficit, lowers prescription drug prices, and extends health care subsidies. And it faces opposition from Republicans, including Senator Joni Ernst, who blamed historically high inflation on Democratic spending proposals.
Bidenomics is driving up the costs of everything, and the Democrats' solution is to spend even more of your hard-earned money to pay for more of their pricey partisan pet projects.
The legislation would be paid for by a 15% corporate minimum tax, savings from empowering Medicaid to negotiate lower drug prices, and closing tax loopholes. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell announced an interest rate hike of 0.75 point, noting he does not believe the U.S. is in a recession.
Overall, in all probability, demand is still strong and the economy is still on track to continue to grow this year. But the slowdown in the second quarter is notable.
The latest quarterly GDP data will be released today. Amid a split within the party, House Democratic leaders canceled votes on a package of public safety bills that would increase police funding. Chairman of the House Democratic Caucus, Akeem Jeffries, said accusations his party wants to defund the police are lies from MAGA Republicans.
They are completely and totally out of control, run by people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert. This is not the Republican Party of John Boehner and Paul Ryan anymore. And we think that that's a problem.
The package also includes an assault weapons ban opposed by Republicans and some Democrats. Capitol Police have told demonstrators to stay away from tonight's annual congressional baseball game. House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, who was critically wounded in a politically motivated shooting at the 2017 game, said protesting a charity event is shameful.
I think this attack on institutions that they don't agree with politically, it's wearing on people. People are tired of just every day they wake up and they're angry.
A week after his COVID diagnosis, President Joe Biden has tested negative. He contrasted his case to former President Donald Trump's in 2020 when vaccinations weren't available.
He had to get helicoptered to Walter Reed Medical Center. He was severely ill. Thankfully, he recovered. When I got COVID, I worked from upstairs at the White House.
Biden touted how far the country has come with vaccinations, testing, and treatments. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eTrust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
In the fall of 2020, about 3 in 5 faculty members at universities in Washington state were contingency staff. Now, a new report shows that university faculty have seen their biggest pay decrease in 50 years. As Eric Tegedoff explains, the teachers at colleges and universities saw their wages go down this academic year by 5%, the greatest cut in decades when adjusted for inflation.
College faculty across the country saw the biggest decrease in their wages in nearly a half century, according to an annual report. The American Association of University Professors finds average pay for full-time faculty increased 2% in fall 2021 compared with 2020. However, when inflation is factored in, real wages actually decreased 5%. Glenn Colby, who compiled the research, says it's the biggest decrease since his organization began collecting this data in 1972.
It's not just the wallet that hurts. Actually, working conditions have been a problem as well. And ultimately, we worry about the morale of faculty who have, for the last couple of years, been in constant crisis mode, putting out one fire after another.
Colby says numbers were similar to the national average for the University of Washington and Washington State University. He says the only fortunate news to come from this data is that layoffs in the wake of the pandemic have seemed to slow. The report doesn't include information from community and technical colleges in Washington State, although they account for nearly half of the state's instructional staff and enrolled students. Colby says these institutions often lack the staff to compile this data. He also notes that community and technical colleges often rely on adjunct professors, who have been even more likely to see their hours cut in the pandemic.
It just adds an air of uncertainty to the profession and makes it more difficult for the colleges to attract and retain the talent that we want in the classrooms.
Colby says one step faculty can take is bargaining for improved working conditions, especially contracts that last longer than 1 year.
Or, even better, negotiate for the opportunity to get tenure at some point.
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Pope Francis issues an apology for school abuse in Quebec. Native campaigners register voters ahead of the abortion vote in Kansas. And the CDC reports indigenous overdose deaths spiked during the pandemic. Here's today's edition of National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Midway through his 6-day visit to Canada, Pope Francis traveled from Edmonton to Quebec City and issued another apology for the abuses committed at residential schools. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
Before making his address at Quebec City's historic citadel, the Pope met privately with Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and with Mary Simon, who is Canada's first Indigenous Governor General. In his speech, Francis said different local Catholic institutions had a part in the deplorable residential school system, which separated many children from their families. And he again asked for forgiveness for the wrongs done by so many Christians to Indigenous peoples. Before he spoke, Mary Simon called his visit an important step.
It is Indigenous peoples who worked, waited, and prayed for an apology on Indigenous lands in Canada. They never gave up.
And Prime Minister Justin Trudeau also described the visit as important, but suggested it was only the beginning.
As Your Holiness has said, begging pardon is not the end of the matter. It is a starting point.
Some Indigenous leaders have said the Pope's apologies have fallen short. And earlier, Crown Indigenous Relations Minister Mark Miller said there were gaps in the apology that could not be ignored, such as the omission of sexual abuses against Indigenous children at the schools, and that the Pope had referred earlier this week to the evil committed by individual Christians, but not the Catholic Church as an institution. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Kansas will be the first state to vote on abortion since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Next week, voters will decide if the state's constitution should continue to protect abortion. Ahead of the election, members of the Native community are holding registration drives. And as Rhonda Lavaldo reports, some Native women say they're concerned about an abortion ban and access to birth control.
The Kansas City Indian Center, KCIC, in Kansas City, Missouri, is part of the Native Vote movement, not only registering voters in Missouri, but also in Kansas as they straddle the state line. They want to get younger voters engaged in the process by doing registration drives anywhere they can. Executive Director Gaylene Krauser, Standing Rock, Lakota, explains why.
There are really a ton of election laws that aren't maybe common knowledge, especially to people that haven't voted before.
And as Kansas will be the first state to vote on an abortion amendment to their constitution, Carol Cadu Blackwood, Kickapoo citizen and Lawrence, Kansas school board member, says this vote is about treaty erosion.
We were forcibly removed. We were disposed of our land, placed in Kansas, and yet again we're going to have more laws placed on us and laws regulating our bodies.
The Value Them Both amendment vote on August 2nd will either uphold Kansans' rights to abortion or potentially end them. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
Drug overdose deaths during the early days of the pandemic spiked significantly among Indigenous populations. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Aaron Bolton reports.
According to the recently published CDC study, drug overdose deaths nationwide increased 30% from 2019 to 2020. The rate increased by 39% among Alaska Native and American Indian populations, nearly double the increase for whites during that same period. The study found that health and economic disparities likely contributed to the spike in overdose deaths among Indigenous populations. The study says overdose prevention efforts need to incorporate culturally responsive interventions and address polysubstance use in order to reduce drug overdose death disparities. I'm Aaron Bolton.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
To help create positive outcomes for young girls, the national program called Girls on the Run focuses on building social, emotional, and physical skills. Mike Moan reports on how it helps them get ready for life.
In early August, fall registration opens at several South Dakota locations that offer a national program geared for grade school-age girls. It combines social and emotional skill building with physical activity. Girls on the Run is a nonprofit that built this youth development curriculum. It's carried out by roughly 200 councils in North America, with trained volunteer coaches leading spring and fall seasons. Yasmina Nelson is the program coordinator in South Dakota. She says they want to help this age group navigate new situations they encounter, such as bullying.
We want the girls to understand that who they are is very unique and special, and that they should be confident in who they are and their unique abilities.
This after-school activity lasts for 10 weeks, capping the season off with a non-competitive celebratory 5K run. There is a registration fee, but organizers say they're willing to work with families on overcoming any cost barriers to ensure access to the program. The South Dakota locations with upcoming registration can be found on the local chapter's website. Nelson says they also thrive on volunteers and encourage interested adults to learn more about helping out. She adds that the running component is just a catalyst for the mission, and that the girls are not pressured to become track stars.
It's all about the movement. So they can hop, skip, jump all the way across their finish line, or they can run whatever their pace is.
The program is designed for girls in grades 3 through 8. Most of the South Dakota sites are for the younger grade levels. A study by the University of Minnesota found that 85% of program participants improved in areas such as confidence, caring, and connection to others. Mike Moen, Greater Dakota News Service. Find our rate trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOU Evening News for Thursday, July 28th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Eric Tegedov, Eric Galatis, Suzanne Potter, Mark Richardson, and Mike Moen. The producer is Annette Newell. Our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Public News Service and Native Voice One. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2 BH Full Lomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Annette Newell. Thanks so much for joining us. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News In Depth. That's coming up next with an interview with the creator of Dungeon Battle Karaoke.